On episode 415 of the 40 Plus Fitness podcast, we bring back Craig Emmerich to talk about his and Maria Emmerich's book, The Carnivore Diet Cookbook. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/415.
Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness? The 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is here for you. I'm your host, Alan Meisner. I'm an NSAM certified personal trainer with a specialization in corrective exercise and fitness nutrition. Let me be your coach as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go.
Now, I've had Maria and Craig Emmerich on the show before. I've had Maria on several times. As you may know, I love, love, love her cookbooks. Well, today we're going to talk to Craig. He's been dealing with Lyme disease for a while now, and he found that keto helped a lot, but he's now found that carnivore really does alleviate most of his symptoms, and he feels much, much better on a carnivore diet. So they did the carnivore diet cookbook. And I want to talk to Craig today to learn more about the carnivore diet, what it is, how you can use it, what the benefits are. So if you want to learn something about the carnivore diet, today's your day. With no further ado, here's Craig Emmerich. Craig, welcome to 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you for having me on.
You know, your cookbooks, now you're working directly with Maria to do the cookbooks. And those cookbooks have been some of my favorites across, you know, those comfort foods, which by far, it made my list of favorite books that I've ever read because of the recipes that she has in there. Her etouffee is just unbelievable. Restaurant foods. You recently sent me one on air fryers, which I'm just now diving into. We don't have an oven in our apartment here. We didn't realize that after we moved in. It's like we have a stovetop but no oven. I'm like, air fryer, that might do it.
It'd be perfect for a small place.
I'm going to be diving into that big, big time. And then your book now, The Carnivore Cookbook, you know, when I first started hearing people moving, you know, because the conversation went, you know, paleo, keto started kind of gaining momentum, and now carnivore. And mm-hmm. The first couple people I started hearing about carnivore, it was almost reminiscent of the vegan approach to eating. It's such a huge elimination diet that I was like, you know, I don't know that I would ever try that. But I'm glad you sent me this cookbook. I'm glad we have this opportunity to have this conversation because I learned so much from this book.
Thanks. Yeah, we tried to put a lot of, you know, it's much more than just a cookbook. You know, it's got over 100 pages of content of why, you know, just the general question of why carnivore. And I think the book covers that pretty well.
Yeah, I would get on these Facebook groups and everybody's like, oh, no, you don't need that. You can just eat ribeyes all day, every day, or bacon. That was the same thing with keto. I'm like, get off the bacon, please. We need a little more than that. And I was really appreciative. I figured there was no way that you and Maria would put out a book without at least giving us some basis in science and some general how-tos before we ever even try something like this.
Yeah, you know, it's what Maria and I, you know, we've been doing this for over 20, you know, Maria for over 20 years, and we've always based everything we do on science and the, you know, things we read, and we're constantly learning. You know, we're always looking for the latest information to, you know, understand and understand this lifestyle and what the science is saying about it and our biology and all of that. And we incorporate that into, you know, our books and what we do with clients. And so, you know, things have evolved over the years. You know, we used to recommend flax and we no longer recommend it. You know, probably 8 or 10 years ago, we read more on the estrogenic, you know, compounds and what they're, you know, do to people and if they're with estrogen balance. And so we no longer recommend it. So, you know, we always try to keep up and learn and educate ourselves.
And I appreciate that. That's part of what this podcast is all about is, you know, I'm generally agnostic until someone gets militant about their way of eating, which is happening on all sides of this. I think a lot of us went through the evolution of the paleo, keto, and now people are looking at carnivore and other kind of spinoffs of keto. I've even seen some vegan keto that's out there. Yeah. And we've covered that on the podcast. And so I encourage people to explore these. Now, with the carnivore diet, it's the way I'm reading it, the way I've gone through this is it's basically an elimination diet. And a lot of people will get into it predominantly for weight loss. Maybe they stalled on keto and they're not losing any more weight. And they're like, well, what do I do? And someone's like, well, you know, I went on the carnivore diet and I lost an additional 5 pounds in a week. And they're like, oh, okay. And so people are experimenting with it. So it's important for them to understand what this diet means. But at the same time, it's there's a reason we're going to do it besides weight loss. For a lot of people, including yourself.
Yeah. So, you know, we took the book when we started talking about applying this diet. We took it in two parts and we said, okay, what are your goals? Why are you doing this? And if the goal is weight loss, then great. Here's kind of how you do it and how to get success doing it for weight loss. And then we took the other angle of, are you doing it for healing? Because that can be a little bit different when it comes to, you know, healing from autoimmune disorders or, you know, bipolar or Lyme disease like I have. Those things require a little different protocol to kind of weed out what you can handle and what your body reacts to or not. And so that was, we called it the carnivore autoimmune protocol. And it's basically, you know, just like an autoimmune protocol where it's an elimination diet, but it's a total elimination diet. And you start out just eating beef and salt and you take it back to the basics and allow your body to adjust to that and then slowly add things back in. And this is a way to find where your tolerance level is. And it's so important because people like me with Lyme disease that I've struggled with now for 7-8 years, with, you know, chronic pain, especially the hardest thing is the migrating pain that I get where, you know, you wake up in the morning and it feels like you sprained your knee. You didn't do anything. You just wake up with this knee pain. Next morning you wake up, it's in the other knee or in your hip or your ankle. And it's very hard to function when you've got this because, I mean, it's just hard to even walk around. With carnivore, I was able to completely eliminate that migrating pain. And by eliminating certain plants and things that I used to eat when I was keto. And so it's a powerful thing. And there's even people in this community like Amber O'Hearn, she's been carnivore for like, I don't know, 15 years. And it's to help with her bipolar. With keto, she saw improvements, but not total stopping of the progression of the disease. With carnivore, she did see the complete stopping of the progression. So, you know, this is not, I look at this as how we've always approached keto in that people come to keto and yeah, the weight loss is great, but they stay with it because of the healing effects and how much better they feel. And a lot of the carnivore is in the same realm as that. You know, people, especially with these, you know, chronic autoimmune or Lyme or these chronic pain conditions, they come to it and they see relief. And that is the driving force behind it.
And I think that's one of the cores here is that this is, for some people, this could just be a temporary, you know, I want to lose 20 pounds.
Yep.
I try carnivore and I do it for 28 to, you know, I don't know, 6 weeks, 6 months, whatever. You lose that weight. And then you can start incorporating, you know, plant material back into your diet and became, yep. You know, go basically keto from that point forward and feel pretty good.
Yeah,
about
keto or low carb and you can, you know, live that way for a long time and forever. And, you know, Maria's been keto for, like I said, over 20 years and she's thriving. And, you know, she kind of goes back and forth herself. You know, there's days where she pretty much eats carnivore and then other days, you know, maybe like this weekend when we're going to family outings, you know, she'll incorporate salads and, you know, other things, basically eating keto. You know, myself, I'm still going to stick to the meat because if I don't, I'm going to be in rough shape that next day with the pain. So, you know, it really depends on your goals.
Yeah. Now you've mentioned in the healing part, you mentioned the Lyme disease, which is what you're familiar with particularly. And then of course, the bipolar. Some of the other conditions you had in there included gout, which one of my clients suffers from. It's kind of hard. I can give him workouts and say, hey, you know, go do this workout. But then, you know, he has a gout flare up and he's bedridden for a week. Yeah. So that's not helping him. Is this diet going to help other things? And you had gout listed, I believe.
Yes.
So what are some other items out there? And exactly what do we think is happening in our bodies that's allowing this to be so effective? Because, you know, if you ask someone, a doctor, about gout, they'll say, stay away from red meat.
Yeah, I mean, that's a common myth. But, you know, most of gout, a lot of times, is related to fructose and as well as possibly oxalates. You know, there's some evidence that, you know, oxalates are one of the anti-nutrients that come with plants. All plants have anti-nutrients. And this is something I really wanted to talk about in the book, because I think this is one of the components that helps people like me, is that you get rid of all these things your body doesn't really want. And when you're at a state like mine, where Lyme disease really chronically depresses your immune function and puts you in an inflammatory state. And so removing additional inflammatory components like anti-nutrients can help the body. And so all these anti-nutrients are basically compounds the body can't use and doesn't want, so it has to detox. There's tons of antioxidants. There's thousands of them thousands of them in plants. Some of the most harmful are things like oxalates and phytates and glucosinolates and these compounds that are basically natural pesticides for the plants to kill off bugs or things that try to eat them. You know, a plant is, you think about it from an evolutionary perspective, animals can defend themselves by growling, showing their teeth, running away. A plant can't do any of those things, so it's developed natural defenses that are basically natural pesticides. So a plant does not want you to eat the stem, the roots, or the leaves, because that kills the plant. So it only wants you to eat the fruit. So the fruit, it makes sweet and tempting to animals, and then it has natural pesticides on its other parts that keep bugs and things from eating them. And there's actually toxicity levels for some of these anti-nutrients. Things like oxalates, it's anywhere from 3 grams to maybe 30 grams of oxalates can kill you. It's a wide range because of immune function and metabolic state. So somebody has diabetes or Lyme disease or some chronic issues or depressed immune function, they might be closer to 3 grams of oxalates that could actually kill you. If you're very healthy, it might be more like 30. But a man did die eating too many oxalates in Europe, and it's been documented. So, you know, this is something that we don't understand about plants. We've been taught our whole lives that fruit and vegetables are unlimited. Eat as much as you want. But there are some negatives, and especially if you've got a disease state, they can really hinder you.
Yeah, you know, they'll tell you, you know, when you go to lift weights, you're doing some damage to the muscle. And then this process called hormesis is what's allowing the muscle to build back stronger and better. Used to tell us, now they tell us with vegetables, is that, you know, yes, they have these anti-nutrients, but your body, under normal functioning, can goes through hormesis there as well. So some of the advice I've heard before is break up your kale 10 minutes before you're ready to start cooking it so that it maximizes these anti-nutrients. And so, yeah, you know, I guess if you have a normally functioning immune system and everything's working out for you, you probably have that opportunity to improve from that stress. But if you're dealing with an autoimmune issue of any type, now, you know, you're in that situation of too much damage.
Yeah. Additional stress is not good in those situations. And so, yeah, I think the mechanisms for all these different conditions where you can see improvements with carnivore are a couple fold. Number one is that aspect, the anti-nutrients you don't have to deal with anymore and additional stress on the body. The other aspect, I think, is nutrient density and bioavailability of those nutrients. If you think about healing the body, what do you need? You need lots of vitamins and minerals to help the body, very nutrient dense foods to help the body recover and repair itself. Well, what is the most nutrient dense food when you, especially when you consider bioavailability? Well, that's going to be animal proteins. We put a lot of charts in the book to kind of explain this, but the very important aspect of it as well is the bioavailability of those nutrients, because there's a lot of these anti-nutrients that can leach these nutrients from the body. So what I mean by that is there's a study that was done that took oysters, which are great for zinc. They're very high in zinc, and they—
And my favorite food, by the way.
Yeah, me as well, when I can get them. We don't get them a lot in the Midwest. Yeah,
we don't get them down here in Panama. So when I travel back up to Louisiana, Florida, I'm hitting the oyster bars for sure.
Yes, and they're, you know, high in DHA, so they're really good food for you. But what they did is they tested postprandial blood zinc levels. So basically, the amount of zinc that's getting into the blood from eating the oysters. And when they did it with just oysters, you get this nice increase in zinc in the blood. So you're getting all this zinc into the body. When they had the participants eat the oysters with black beans, like a third of the zinc gets into the body. And then when they had them eat them with corn tortilla chips, none of the zinc gets into the body. And this is, I believe, is because of those anti-nutrients like oxalates that latch on to minerals. And then they're detoxed, they go right through the body. So the body is basically robbed of these nutrients. And so going to carnivore eliminates any of that from happening. And you get this huge dose of vitamins into the body that your body hadn't been getting. And that helps with healing.
So let's get into that a little bit, because, you know, someone sit there and say, you're going to sit down and just eat meat. You're obviously, maybe not so obviously, not getting all the vitamins and minerals that you could get from vegetables and fruits. But what you're saying is all of the necessary vitamins and minerals are available in animal products. And they may be even more bioavailable to us in addition to that.
Yeah. And, you know, the charts that I put in the book, I tried to kind of show that. And we have, I think, about 15 vitamins and minerals listed in these charts. And they compare the content of, you know, beef liver, kale, you know, broccoli, all of these foods. And what you see is that beef by itself stacks up really well against those other foods. I think in the one chart I did of just beef, like a steak, versus kale, blueberries, and an apple, beef is number one in the vitamins and minerals in 13 out of the 15 vitamins and minerals, and number two in one other one. So it's either one or two in all but one. And I think the only one it wasn't was vitamin C, which vitamin C is your requirement for vitamin C in the body is directly proportional to the amount of carbohydrates you eat. The less carbs you eat, the less vitamin C you need. So it's my position that, especially if you eat a nose to tail type of carnivore diet where you incorporate things like beef liver and, you know, bone marrow and these kind of things, you're getting all the nutrients your body needs. And it's in a more bioavailable form than you get from the plants.
And like I said, I trust you and Maria so much that I knew when I started flipping through the recipes, you were going to be giving us some advice on how to get liver and bone marrow into our diet on a regular basis, even for those who have difficulty with it. Can you tell us your trick for getting liver into your meals, even when you don't necessarily like the texture or flavor of liver?
Yeah, there's a few things that we do. Even if you're not carnivore, if you're looking at a keto a lifestyle, even in keto, it's great to incorporate some liver, because there's probably nothing on the planet that's more nutrient dense than beef liver. I mean, that is like nature's multivitamin. So we try to incorporate it wherever we can. One of the great things that you can do is mix it into hamburger at like a 5-to-1 ratio. So for every 5 pounds of hamburger, you put a pound of ground liver into it and you mix it all up, and it makes amazing burgers. Or you can take that and make it into things like Maria's protein noodle lasagna or her chili recipe. If you're really averse to the taste, chili is a great one, because the more spice there is, the more you kind of cover that taste, and usually in her chili recipe, you don't even notice that it's, if you don't tell somebody, they won't know that it's not, that there's beef liver in there.
I wouldn't advise that, because when you tell them afterwards, they're going to be pretty angry with you.
Yeah.
I know my wife would.
But maybe with your kids.
Just get them to try it. Yeah, just get them to try it. Say, hey, try this meatloaf. Just a taste. Yeah. You might not like it, but just try it. And if you like it, it's from Maria's cookbook. I know it's going to be good, but here, try this. And if you don't like it, then I understand. But don't sit down to dinner and then tell your whole family what you did later.
Well, actually, we like to let our kids' palates do the talking. You know, one of the things Maria gets annoyed by is, like, her mother will sometimes say to the, "Oh, I'm ready. You might not like this. This is Maria's healthy pancakes. Well, now the kids are going to hate it.
Yeah.
Let them try it. And if they like it, great. You know, they don't need to know that it's the healthy one."
I can put it with kids, I get it. Kids, I get it. With your spouse, you might want to say, I'm going to try this experiment. I want you to try it with me. Are you game? If not, I'll eat all of it. I promise. I'll eat every bit of it. I don't need you. I just want to share this healthy meal with you.
But that's probably the best way to incorporate it if you're averse to it. Some people just like, you know, they soak it in some cream and then grill it with some onions. Some, you know, there's a lot of people that like it just like that. Right. Another way to get it in, if you're really averse to the taste, is you basically cut it into little cubes and then you freeze it and then you just pop them like, swallow them like a multivitamin. Yeah. And that's a way to get past the taste if you're really averse.
Cool. I like that. So we don't necessarily need vitamins and veggies for our vitamins or minerals. We can get all that we need from a mixture of beef liver and some other meats. We can kind of put that together to build out the nutrition that we need. But as far as fiber, because, you know, we're told we're going to struggle if we don't get fiber in our diet. Our gut's going to hate us. We're never going to poop again. Explain a little bit about that, because I do see some posts out there. It's like, I just started this carnivore diet and I'm struggling. I haven't pooped in 3 days. I'm like,
Well, we see it go both ways. Sometimes people will get a little constipated. Some people will get diarrhea. A lot of that's just transitioning. You know, the body has to adapt and adjust to any big change in your diet. And that's why we talked in the book. One thing that can really help is adding digestive enzymes after your meal. And a little HCL, hydrochloric acid, with your first bites of food. And do that in the first few days or week just to help your body adjust to eating more meat. And that usually helps with any diarrhea issues or digestive issues. But back to the fiber thing, you know, that's a common myth that you need this thing your body cannot digest, fiber, to bulk up your stools and shove it through the GI tract. And to me, that just seems weird. You know, first of all, there's studies that have shown, there was a study in Japan that showed that the lower the fiber, when you lowered fiber, it actually made constipation better. And there's another study that showed that symptoms of diverticulitis, they had less issues with the less the fiber they ate. Zero fiber was the best scenario with almost all their symptoms going away. So having this fiber can actually bulk up the stools and elongate the intestines and irritate them. So it actually can be a negative in that way. And another example is when people say you got to have fiber to go number two. Well, I always ask them, you know, does a baby that's being breastfed typically have any issue going number two? I mean, you know, they have no issues with zero fiber in their from the breast milk.
So, you know, I think back to a cat. You know, a cat is a pure carnivore. And sadly enough, some people try to turn their cats into vegans. And that doesn't work out very well. But so you end up with this carnivore. And I've watched it. A cat will go out in the yard and it'll start eating some grass. And it typically just eats that grass at moments where it is already having digestive issues. So is there a case for some fiber in our diet or not really?
Well, I don't know if that's, you know, like our dog would do that and he would gag and throw up. It's like he's trying to purge himself when he would eat the grass. So I'm not sure if there's a connection.
Yeah, I just figured there was a nutrition, I mean, not a nutrition problem, but maybe a digestion issue that the animal is dealing with. It's trying to put something in a system that isn't really, in its opinion, food.
Yeah, our dog always threw up after he ate the grass, so I don't know if that's why he was doing it. But
now, if someone's coming directly from the standard American diet and going into carnivore, this is a fairly drastic move. Someone going from keto to carnivore, it actually seems to be a pretty natural transition. I think the core for both is just there is an additional requirement for electrolytes.
Yeah, well, at least a focus on it. I think it's much less of an issue if you're coming from keto, depending on your level of keto, to carnivore. You're already focusing on electrolytes and making sure you're getting them. So it's probably not as big of an issue there, but it's still important, as important as it is with keto. Carbohydrates are water retaining. So when you eat, the more carbohydrates you eat, the more water you retain. And then when you eliminate the carbohydrates, your body flushes out this retained water, which is a good thing. You don't want to be retaining water and bloated. But with that water go electrolytes that are associated with it. So you need to replenish your electrolytes. And especially when you're eating a whole foods, keto or carnivore type of diet, because you're not getting sodium in the food. Where, standard American diet, there's sodium in everything. You know, a milkshake at McDonald's has more sodium than their French fries. So you're getting all this sodium that you don't even realize. And when you go to Whole Foods, there's no sodium. So you got to make sure to add that salt back in.
Yeah, I run low on potassium and sodium already. So it is something if I'm going to experiment with something like that, it is something that I would definitely make sure that I was getting my electrolytes.
Yeah, the body, it likes sodium and potassium to be kind of in balance. And while eating carnivore, beef and proteins are pretty high in potassium. But what the body has this pathway of, if you're not getting enough sodium, it'll leach potassium until they're kind of in balance again. And so having sodium low can actually result in having potassium low. So you got to keep your sodium intake up to keep them balanced.
Yeah. Craig, I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be. What are three strategies or tactics to get and stay well?
Well, number one, I think, is just to stay as active as you can. And I think a component of that is getting outside. Today we spend so much time in unnatural environments with, artificial lighting, indoors, never contacting with nature or the sun or outdoors. And I think that's detrimental to health and just mental health as well. but disconnecting and getting out in nature and getting outside, I think, is a huge component. And just, we were in a low carb universe in Spain, and one of the speakers was a dentist from the United Kingdom. And he said, you should eat like you're never able to brush your teeth again. And I thought that was a pretty interesting take on it, in that, anything that is going to mess up your teeth is probably messing up your digestive tract as well. And, if you just focus on eating the healthiest for your teeth and your body, you're going to end up in a better situation.
Okay. Wonderful. Now, Craig, if someone wanted to learn more about you, Maria, and the book and all the wonderful things that you're doing, where would you like for me to send them?
Well, we have a couple places they can go. They can go to our blog, which is all free recipes and free information. That's at mariamindbodyhealth.com. And then we have a support website for subscribers with lots of ebooks and things that are available to purchase. And that's keto-adapted.com. And then we usually find us on social media under Maria Emmerich or Craig Emmerich. And then on Facebook, we also have a couple groups, one called Keto, one called Keto Carnivore, and another called 30-Day Ketogenic Cleanse for our cleanse book.
Cool. Well, this is episode 415. So you can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/415, and you'll find all the show notes and those links there. Craig, thank you so much for being part of 40 Plus Fitness Podcast again.
Thank you, Alan.
Did you know that we have a 40 Plus Fitness Podcast group on Facebook? Yep, we sure do. You can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/group. That's a great place to interact with me and other listeners of the show. I'm on there all the time, trying to put out great content, trying to make it fun. It's a really cool place. We have weekly challenges. Go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/group and request to join the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast group. Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Dr. Arthur Atkinson and discuss his book, The New Keto-Friendly South Beach Diet. Until then, have a happy and healthy week.